Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
We've talked about class on the economic scale, but there's also a power scale with its own continuum. There are many occupations and entities that solely exist to preserve the power of the ruling class. These power structures are created over many years and are all self-perpetuating with one primary objective: to enforce the class divide.
Since this is a Worker Movement podcast, we really want to emphasize what the two classes are. So there's really no confusion when we talk about, you know, the following, like, you know, class struggle concepts and any type of constructs here. The two classes are the working and the ruling. And we generally refer to the working class as the proletariat, right? The worker. We call them the middle class, the lower class. We have all these different words for them. And we just, same thing we do with the ruling class. The ruling class are those with the power, and they normally are capitalists who control the means of production and the means for paying for the power. And because of capitalism, right, there is an economic incentive for you to betray your class as a worker to the ruling class in order to get an economic reward. The best example, again, we always talk about the managerial class, right? It's beneficial to the manager who makes more money than you as a worker to treat you like shit, because in the end of the day, they get rewarded for that behavior.
So as part of this class struggle, you can look at it as two aspects. There's the realization, as a worker, of what your material conditions are. You are a worker. Your manager has control over your work life. That is, in some way, shape, or form, a power struggle. And the other component is the improvement of your material conditions. So this is a bit of a feedback loop, and it's, I realize what my material conditions are, and I work to improve them. And this repeats over and over and over. And if you look at this throughout history, this is effectively what class struggle is and how it has played out historically. The ability to influence your material conditions is what we're going to call power. And that's what power you want to attain. And that's what we're going to talk about on this episode.
All right. So power. We all struggle for power. We want it in our daily lives. We know that it's the key to success. We know as workers, we don't have the power to change our working conditions the way we want to. And that's because capital dictates, you know, what those conditions should be. We could be like the shithead DSA and just beg and plead for our employers to grant us better working conditions, but fuck the DSA. There are two types of powers that we're going to talk about: is the power to change material conditions. You know, that's the ability to change the world around you, and then the power to preserve those material conditions. So how do you enforce the class struggle, and how do you make sure that nothing changes?
The power to preserve
is built into pectin. In order for us to get preserves, we have to somehow boil it off and make sure that we don't have any bacteria, and then solidify it.
This is the key to long winters and enjoying your bread if you're British. Don't forget to brush your teeth.
Don't forget to get your marmalade.
So understanding this power struggle of power to change and power to preserve is a key aspect in attempting to enact change. These two powers are diametrically opposed. One attempts to change, the other one attempts to prevent change. Very simple from a structural system standpoint. The power to change is typically, in our governmental system, bestowed upon members of the government. This is a bit of a pro-electoral concept, because in order to have power in government, you have to win an election. And we're going to advocate for this again at the local level, because that's everything we do. So the power often lies within these elected officials, your city council, your mayors, your county commissioners, local offices like that is where this power is derived. So your local government exists. It's democratically elected. Nobody gives a shit and nobody votes in these elections. So it's not really democratic. It's controlled by the small group of people that have an incentive to participate. But the idea is that a district, a municipality, a governing entity has self-determination. And this is mainly a facade, but the facade exists. The power exists to change your local government, and as part of that, change material conditions.
The facade exists because there is many, many institutions in place to preserve the structures around it. Absolutely, right? There are not only the institutions of how do you do local zoning and how do you make sure the parks are safe and clean, et cetera. All the rules are in place. All those exist to keep your your thoughts and prayers or whatever stuck with inside of your house. All right. Every single thing in the local government is designed to keep you from trying to lash out and change things because they make it easy for you in some cases. The other thing is that there's a lot of third parties involved with this too, who benefit primarily from the institution. So local builders who benefit from not being forced to pay prevailing wages, who benefit from not needing licenses or whatever the keys to the city are. There's a Chamber of Commerce we talked about in the last episode who's designed to just promote small businesses and get as much land grab from the city as possible. Right, there's the organization, like the Renters Association or Rental Association, whose job it is to get favorable laws passed so that rental units can evict when they want to. There's a lot of things to preserve the power that have manifested through years and years and years of targeted, you know, buildup. And it's happened without you knowing it. This is the power to preserve that we have to actually break down in order for us to have change. You must destroy those institutions before we can talk about how to replace them.
These third-party institutions, these separate entities, operate in this neoliberal system where they have power to preserve the current economic system without any elected officials needing to do anything.
At all. Anything at all.
They've been delegated power by public officials to have autonomy to do whatever they think is best. And then it allows cover for the elected officials to kind of just sit back and say, well, this is the system that we have. So a good example of this is if your town has a parade once a year in the summer, everybody gets together and has a parade. And then afterwards you have pancakes at the fire department or something like that. Chances are pretty good that a private entity is the entity that's organizing that parade. It's not planned by the city. The city likely pays this private entity and grants special permits for access to parks or roads that would otherwise be unavailable to any random entity. If, let's say, you wanted to hold your own parade, you likely wouldn't without the blessing of your public officials, and that's because neoliberalism has invaded the local governments to the extent that I'm a public official. I want to ensure that my point of view is upheld, and I'm going to uphold that by being shady and only granting permission to some of these third parties. And these third parties are what enforce the power to preserve without public officials needing to act.
And just to clarify, when you say private parties, what do you mean? What's some examples?
It's your charities, it's your nonprofits, it's stuff like the Chamber of Commerce, it's business groups, it's corporate interests, it's entities like the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts or school parent associations, unions.
It's really any group then that was formed with some interest that has somehow convinced the city that what they're doing is in the city's best interest. For example, things like Little League, who come in and say, we need more parks, and actually every single park maybe should have a baseball field or diamond in it, or Little League. Or not Little League, but the football players, right? Same idea. We have more parks, but when you include these parks, make sure you have fields for us to play on. Because they don't really care that there's more parks. They care that they have access to more members to keep growing their membership and perpetuating what they're doing, which is just, you know, growing power for the sake of power. And then they become influential. So if you have a group of 1,000 people or 500 people, whatever the mailing list has to be, because, you know, every league has 500 kids playing. Now you have 500 families or 1,000 parents that vote. Now you have the ability to influence locally in local elections. So there's actually a benefit for these groups existing for themselves, which is they can go ahead and say, I can raise money for you, or I can whisper campaign and say that you're the best city council member and get my 1,000 people to vote for you. And remember, even in towns of 70,000 people, 100,000 people, you're only going to get 12,000 votes to win because nobody votes locally. So the structures are in place because nobody is tuned into local elections, and there's groups in the background who are whisper campaigning for the support of individuals who play ball with them. And that growth has happened over many, many years again without anybody knowing that they exist. In fact, people look upon them in positive light because they think that little Timmy's having a great job at baseball. I mean, it's really the parents' projection of what their childhood wants to be as they go into it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is basically groups of people that have money. Chamber of Commerce, again, is made up of individuals who don't even live in the city. Most small businesses and small business owners don't live in the city. that they belong to the Chamber of Commerce of. So if you have 75 subway restaurants or fast food restaurants in 75 different cities, you're going to belong to 75 different Chamber of Commerce and give them money, and they're gonna make sure that they fight on your behalf in every single town.
So to just carry out the baseball analogy a little bit further, let's say 30 years ago you decided to start a little league, and there was one baseball diamond, 100 kids played, and they had issues scheduling the parks. So those 100 people got together and said, hey, we should have more baseball diamonds. And they attempted to lobby the smaller city at the time and said, let's have more baseball fields. And somebody from that group ran as city council, and they won, and they wanted to make more baseball fields. So then they made two baseball fields. And now you have somebody entrenched in the local government supporting baseball fields and supporting this group of people. This happens, it goes on a couple cycles, you get four baseball fields, you get more people playing, you have two people on the city council now with power. So all of a sudden you have this political group of baseball that has nothing to do with the actual act of governing. They just want baseball fields. And now you have people on the city council that are tied to the presence of baseball fields. You have a power structure here, and the power structure that exists is everybody that plays Little League and has kids that play Little League mm-hmm. are interested in preserving their ability to play Little League. And that preservation of power has manifested by having people on the city council supporting their position. This is a power structure that preserves the presence of baseball fields, whether or not it's in the public interest or not. The institution of Little League has grown to have power in the city.
Yeah, and this is just one example of multiple ways this takes form. And people may belong to multiple different groups like this. They may give money to them without knowing what the actual outcomes of what that donations are. Now let's talk for a little bit about the power structures that prevent change in the form of policing. It's more than just police. You have your police, and we all know what that looks like, right? But we also have, and we'll go two directions. We'll talk about the support for the police, and we'll also talk about the structures within city council for the police. So how it normally works is that the champions of the police fight or argue that crime rate's low. It's good for home values. There's all these positives for having, all this police presence, right? There's a drug issue we're trying to fight. And so how that perpetuates itself within the city council or the groups within government is that we're here to protect and serve, and they're going to be part of, the parade. They're going to be part of everything around us that is culturally part of the city. But that goes to who the prosecutor is. So the prosecutor might be a law and order prosecutor, and they're considered to be the chief law enforcement agent of their district or where they are. So the prosecutor is actually a cop. They're not there to be your friend or to help and make the city better. They're there to basically hit the number one thing that the politicians want, which is a statistic about whether or not crimes are being solved. So they don't actually care that crimes are being solved correctly because there's no accountability. They only really care that crimes are being solved. And they love to see petty crimes having the books thrown at them because they basically feel what the people want to hear. Drug crimes are bad or burglary is bad. But you don't see the same thing for, drunk driving and other things that majority of society may do. It's only what they perceive that to be bad. So they may go after drugs. They may go after child trafficking. Even though there may not be child trafficking in your city, they're going to say that because that's a big hot button thing. It also means that the judges, people that run for judge or get pushed or promoted, are individuals who had the same mentality of law and order, who had the same fight to make sure that the police get the power that they want. So that means that individuals supporting that judge are probably the same individuals who are supporting the law and order part of it, which then brings us to the second part. So it's perpetuated in the city council, it's perperpetuated at the judge level, it's perpetuated at the city clerk, people who are there to take your money that funds the city, right? Tickets fund the city. So they rely on you to break laws. They rely on you to speed, and they rely on the police to go and take your money from you in the form of a tax in order to keep funding the city. So it's a one giant cycle just for the support. They don't want to lose that. The second is that they don't want to look weak on crime. So they start talking about defunding. They look bad, right? So it's one of these really weird institutions that can never do wrong, even though we know that it's probably one of the worst institutions that we have.
And it's bad because it exists to support the ruling class.
Absolutely. It's intended to only support the ruling class. Because there are no police who are trained to tackle wage theft or any of the common abuses that you see. Tip stealing, right? Financial crimes that happen to hurt the working class that benefit the ruling class. The police don't target that. What they target are the broken windows crimes of things like small petty drug use or kids out gallivanting around breaking windows or speeding or whatever. Right? I mean, you want the police to be out there enforcing drunk driving laws, yes, but at the same time, you don't need them armed to the teeth shooting somebody. You don't need police to do that. It's literally not a requirement to have the police pull you over or be at a scene of an accident. It's not a requirement. And yet they keep being put in these situations in which the police are supposed to be dedicated or needed, and yet they don't actually need to be there for the city to run.
The concept behind the police is to preserve the interests of the power structure that already exists. It's self-perpetuating. We make the crime low so that people want to move here because the crime is low. And they use that as a tool to kind of manipulate policy statements of the city. If you were to defund the police, they have the ability to, all of a sudden, they might stop enforcing certain aspects, and they can whine and cry about how, oh, crime is up, and that's going to mean property values are going to go down, and you don't want to open a business here. So they have some power to preserve their system by kind of juking the numbers.
Pure exploitation. It's fear-mongering exploitation.
And when was the last time you saw on your local news that the cops had arrested a business owner for wage theft? I don't think I've ever seen it happen, but every single night you see somebody getting shot or there was a burglary or something like that. Wage theft happens just as often, if not more, than all of these other observable violent crimes, but the police are not equipped to support it.
Wage theft accounts for more damage to the worker than larceny, than burglary to combine. So you talk about like armed robbery and burglary and all these violent crimes. Wage theft is violence, and wage theft happens at a much higher scale than those. It's like 3 to 1. It's a ridiculous amount of violence created every day.
So the police inhibit certain acts of violence, but they enable institutional acts of violence through wage theft.
That's exactly right.
And that is a power to preserve the current economic system as it is understood today across the entire national economic system.
Exactly. So how do the police stay in power besides fear and basically a tit for tat or a quid pro quo with the city officials, right? I won't write you a ticket if, you know, whatever, we're best friends, I love the police, etc. Right? The other way is that there are lots and lots of groups, institutions that prop up the police as being the saviors to you and I, that these are the most magical fucking creatures on the land, like a unicorn, right? That they have to be saved. And it comes to the form, many forms, right? It has, you know, like when you had the police walking around in the hallways being handing out lollipops and basically tricking children into believing that they're good people. You have it in the parades. Like we said before, you have it in the areas in which the Boy Scouts, for some reason, cherish them. You have all of these different institutions that just prop up and love the police. But you also have these groups in the background that fund the police. The local police union support, right? You see the stickers on the back of the car, I support the police union, or I support a police officer, or whatever those different associations are. And they basically sell you a sticker to put on your window so when the police pull you over, it lets them know that you support them. And so what happens when you have unconscious bias? It means that these individuals are probably going to get off with a lighter warning than you and I, because they've sent $20 to the Retired Police Academy Dog Training Video.org group. Additionally, there's these groups that may seek funding from local businesses that are, you know, designed to give money and training to the police. So things like, we're going to be a donation for funding the purchasing of police dog training. And they go out and they ask all the local businesses for money. And then they publish that list of businesses to the police. We want to thank Walmart and Target and Piggly Wiggly and DeWalt and Ocean Spray and Nestle for their support for funding this. So now the police have an incentive to make sure that they respond better to those large organizations. And those organizations, because they get more of a private police sort of unit, are more willing to now donate more money to give them more bulletproof vests, which is then more sustainable because now the the city council doesn't have to pay as much to those things or increase taxes. So it's a really weird and sort of sycophant cycle here that supports policing. It's not just, you know, the city council. It is a bunch of different groups who only benefit from having police. Again, petty larceny goes down or theft goes down or there's a police car in the parking lot. The other day for Black Friday shopping, I wasn't shopping. I actually just driving. And I actually saw a sheriff sitting in the parking lot of a major retailer's to basically say, don't you think about, you know, stealing, or don't think about causing trouble today because capital needs people to go out and buy. Right. So they're basically private armies for these corporations, and they get that sustainability because they donate to charities who then donate money back to the police.
And all of this occurs without any action by any elected official.
Yep, this is that institutions that are that belong outside of elections, outside of a governing body, they get some benefit from supporting the police. And there's also the perverts who love authoritarianism, who would rather see people locked in jail than free, and they're going to be the ones that are the head of these organizations, or somebody who's a lawyer who wants to be prosecutor one day, maybe become chair, so they get their name out there as being the best candidate to be prosecutor because they support the police. Right, there's always a reason why someone does something. There's always a motive.
So we've largely discussed all the various different power structures that exist in a local government that preserve the material conditions that are occurring today. And material conditions are established for the benefit of the ruling class. Nobody preserving power gives a shit about the workers' plight and what their material conditions are. So if you're in the position where you want to change your material conditions, you have realized that your material conditions are bad and you want to improve them, how do you go about doing this? The first thing that you need to map out and understand is which entities, institutions, and people in your local area enforce the existing power structures. Who preserves the material conditions locally? You have to identify that.
And this doesn't have to be a very strenuous activity, because we've already given you some examples of where to start. If you notice that there is a Chamber of Commerce, that is an institution that's in place to basically hold the power struggles, right? Preserve the material conditions. There's a rentals association. They own rental property. They're designed to hold you down. The rentals association's in place to stop rent control. That's there. If there's a build association, they're there to try to stop prevailing wages and try to make sure that the city doesn't use unions, basically, for any of their builds, and make sure that their codes, that they can get through the code review or the code checks without, you know, any violations, to make it easier for them to put up shittier buildings and screw you over more. They're the ones asking for things like, you know, can I get a tax break if I do XYZ? But those exist. And there's also the nonprofits. Be very wary of any individual that runs a parade. In fact, start there. See who runs a parade. See what the nonprofits are that donate money, and then see who's on the board. And I'm sure you're going to find they're pretty much interconnected and part of the club that is the ones that run the city council, who are constantly on the boards of like the parks and rec and things that are really important to the city, because they all want the power. And those are the ones that are preserving the class struggle. So your job now is to try to find some of these organizations and see if they violate any laws, donation laws. See if they have their paperwork in place. See if they actually are a formed entity. If they didn't form their entity and you can't find them in the business registry, register their name. I mean, that's disruptive and possibly kind of fun. The other thing is to call them out and to ask questions as to why that's defrauding them. You know, get on the city council and ask them why they're giving power to this institution. Then they shouldn't be there. Ask them why they have a seat on the board. Because a lot of times they're going to pull in the chair of all these organizations will have some weird seat on one of the weird little committees that the city council has. Ask the question why they're on that committee. They're doing it for the sake of power. And those are what you can do to be disruptive. The one caveat here, and this is a really important statement, and we're saving it for the end. If you poke the bear will roar back. This needs to happen. We need individuals to poke the bear. We need people to fight back and to find out what's going on locally, because it's only then that you can tear down the institutions and promote the worker.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.